David Quist is the executive director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. He's a busy guy today. He'll be, of course, paying close attention to the throne speech this afternoon as Parliament reconvenes. And then on the heels of that, tomorrow is the federal budget that comes down. We've been hearing a lot about what might be in it. David Quist knows what he'd like to see in it, so much so that he's part of the lockup. And we'll explain that a little further, too. But first, let's find out what the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada is all about. We've got Dave Quist on the line from Ottawa. David, good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, John, and good to be with you on Sounding Board today.
Thank you. Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. Can you give us an overview of what that group's all about?
We sure can. It's we're a social policy think tank, which really means that we're not an advocacy group, but rather we do some of our own research. We draw together research from academics and universities and other think tanks, bring it into a Canadian context, and we're located in Ottawa, so we try to make ourselves available to present that information to members of Parliament, the House of Commons, our senators. We appear before national and regional media, just as we're doing today, in an effort to promote the best combination of marriage and family that we can think of, and support, as you said in your introduction, for the Haiti issue. The future is in our children, and that's really what we're concerned about.
Now, does this group have any religious overtones at all, Dave?
We're part of Focus on the Family Canada. We're the social policy arm of Focus Canada, and so we work with that as a foundation. And but we base our research on the data, the statistics, the research that is going on by a wide range of academics, both within Canada and certainly around the world as well.
Can you give us an example of where the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada may have changed some policy to benefit families and the institution of marriage in Canada?
Well, one of the things that we were involved with a couple of years ago is the changing of the approval rate of when young adults can have legally have sex, and that. So families are saying, well, why is that important? Well, it's important because when we move the age range for sexual consent from 14 to 16 years of age, it really was more than just protection of children. It was really protection of them from predators that would like to prey on young adults, as young teenagers, as in a sexual way. And so we appeared before committee a couple of times on that. We promoted the research that backed that up, and we're very pleased that the government of the day, the Conservative government about 3 years ago, made that particular change. We've been advocating a couple of other things since that time, and those actually play right into our throne speech and budget conversations with regard to family income splitting, and that's something we've been advocating for quite some time now as well.
Okay, well, let's talk about that in more detail. You want the throne speech to be family-friendly. What do you mean by that?
Well, obviously, families are key ingredients in our society. It's well supported and well seen across not just Canada but around the world that when we have strong social fabric, when we have a strong family, our country is strong. It's strong. It becomes strong economically. It becomes strong fiscally. It becomes strong socially. Those that are in need, whether they be single parent families or homeless people or underprivileged people in some other way, when we have strong family bonds, strong families across the country, those issues are dealt with most effectively. There's a role for governments at every level to support homeless people and to support low-income people and so on. But the best way to deal with that, in our experience, in our research, is through the social fabric of our country, be it through NGOs, be it through faith communities, be it through direct families. And so when we have strong families, we do have a strong nation.
Okay, what was that first thing you said? NGOs? Is that what you said?
Yes, NGOs are non-governmental organizations.
Okay.
And there's a variety of those around the country as well. The YMCA and the Big Brothers and things like that are NGO organizations where they're non-profits. Some of them are charitable organizations. And they're working because of a specific need in their community or across the country to assist young boys and girls without dads or without moms, to assist homeless people on the streets, the people that are underprivileged for whatever reason. and they're working hard to assist those people as much as they can.
David, what about same-sex families which exist in Canada?
Well, they certainly do exist in Canada. That is a legal change that occurred several years ago now in Canada. The research is very new on same-sex families. Obviously, that's something that we've been tracking with. We've been talking with other academics to determine what are the outcomes. Right now, the research is quite clear that children do best when raised by their married, biologically married mom and dad. And I know that there's going to be some people that don't like to hear that, but the research is quite clear, whether it's here in Canada, the U.S., or around the world, the kids do best when they have the role models of mom and dad in their lives and are being raised by a married mom and dad as well.
But that, obviously, Dave, that's so generic when you say that, because there are some mom and dads out there that have no business being together. And if they're constantly fighting and there's violence within the household, that's not good for children.
Absolutely not. You're quite right. When there is dysfunction within the family unit, that's not healthy for kids. It's not healthy for moms or for dads as well. Thankfully, that is actually a very low percentage. We hear about it a lot, but when we actually look at where family breakdown occurs, it's less than 10% of the family breakups actually involve drug or alcohol abuse, verbal abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and things of that nature. We hear about them. They're not acceptable, and unfortunately, sometimes a family breakdown is the only way that is going to be a safe environment for children in that scenario. But it does occur, and we certainly recognize that. Thankfully, the vast majority, about 90% of families, are not in that area.
Okay, and you mentioned that research shows, whatever research that may be, mm-hmm. that children do best in a family unit raised by a biological mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
But do you or does your organization support same-sex families at all?
That's we don't think that is the best model for children to be raised in, and so we have not supported that at this particular time. We recognize that it's a legal change in the country, and the research is still too new to really draw any further conclusions on that. We'll be watching that in the years to come and determine what other outcomes are available with that.
Dave Quist is the Executive Director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, and is a social arm, if you will, of Focus on the Family. And we're all familiar with that, the program Focus on the Family. I'm sure we've all heard it at one time or another on one radio station or another throughout Canada. Does a majority government or does a minority government, which one is more family-friendly, do you think, in your experience?
That's a really interesting question, John. I hadn't thought of it quite in that way before. The one advantage to a minority government is that more often a private member's bill will be put forward and is more successful to be fully debated and actually come into law. And by a private member's bill, that means that an individual member of parliament can put forward a bill that might have something to do with, in this case, families, that has more of a chance of being heard and debated and successfully come into law. A majority government, obviously, if the conservative government of the day today became the government tomorrow, they can push almost any bill through. And then the truth would be if the Liberals became government or the NDP or the Green Party for that matter. So then it would come down to a matter of the party policy on family issues, whether they decided to put legislation forward. The advantage of a minority government with a private member's bill, an individual that would bring a bill forward, is that he or she, as an individual member of parliament, might be more interested in supporting a certain family cause, whether it be family income splitting or around the child care issues, and they might be able to push that through on their own. If a majority government is placed and doesn't have a family-friendly policy, then chances are it's not going to rise during that 4 or 5 year time of the government in question.
Well, let's get specific here, and I think you've touched on a few of them, Dave. What do you hope to hear in the throne speech today and perhaps see in the budget tomorrow?
Well, I think I've come up with two different lists, actually, and because there's one list of what I would prefer to see, and there's the other list of what I'm likely to see. And those there's a crossover, but they're not 100% the same. A couple of issues that I'd like to see in the budget, my preference list, the number one issue would be family income splitting. Right now in the province of Ontario, for example, two families living side by side, each with a family income of $70,000. And we crunched the numbers with Jack Mintz, a noted Canadian economist, a couple of years ago. Two families each earning $70,000, one with a single income family and the other with both parents earning $35,000 each.
Mm-hmm.
So they could be living side by side, each have two children, the same city taxes and all that sort of stuff. The single parent family is actually paying about $4,000 more than the dual income family, even though their family income is the same. They both want to put their children into hockey or music lessons or dance classes or whatever, you know, their children are interested in. But the single-income family is paying about $4,000 more in taxes at the provincial and the federal level than the dual-income family. I don't think that that's fair. I think there's a penalty that's attached to that. By allowing families to keep more of their money in their pocket, it allows them to make more choices that they think is best for their family. Not every family is going to have one parent stay at home. Some parents wish to work, or there might be career aspirations or things that they need to do and for whatever reason. But by keeping taxes that high, many families don't have a choice. They have to work. And so I'd rather see a family income splitting scenario that allows more families to make the decision for themselves rather than a choice being imposed on them by the government themselves.
So what you're saying is take the best possible program we have available to us and make sure it's a blanket type of policy that covers everyone.
Yes. Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay. So you're hoping to see that. You would like to see that. Will you?
I'm not sure that we're going to see it in this scenario. We have talked with the finance minister and finance officers before, other members of parliament. They like the idea. They are sold on the idea. The difficulty we've had in the last year, year and a half, as we all know, has been the downturn in the economy and the stimulus package that's gone into supporting different sectors of the economy. My read is that that's not going to occur in this year's budget, but we hold up hope for that for next year and that it will, if the economy continues to turn around as we've seen in this last quarter, that in fact that will rise back to the top of the finance minister's list of things to do.
So then have you seen anything that's family friendly that might happen today or tomorrow?
Well, I think what we might see, and this goes back to my preference list, is that a recognition of the changing demographic rates. We hear a lot about the baby boomers, and in fact, in the next couple of years, the baby boomers are going to start to hit into that retirement era. The earliest baby boomers are around that 64, 65 years age right now, and we've done some number crunching here at the Institute and determined that while we have to deal with the young children in our families, that we've got another crisis on our hands, and that is as those baby boomers move into retirement, they are not going to be paying as many taxes. They are not going to be taking advantage or they'll be taking more advantage of social programs out in the communities at the federal, provincial, and municipal levels, all which cost money. And certainly health care costs are actually going to rise as well. As seniors age, their health care costs naturally rise as well. And we tend to be living longer these days. And so that means in the last years of our life that our health care costs will be going higher and higher. With fewer men and women in the workforce because of retirement, and not as many babies being born the last several years and moving into the workforce, that means that we're going to have more stress on our taxes-based programs, such as health care, and fewer people actually paying for it. So that's going to be stretching us a great deal in our pocketbooks. Our children and our grandchildren are going to be paying more in taxes unless we change some things that will allow seniors or potential seniors to save more, to ensure that their health care costs are taken care of in the future, and other social programs for that matter as well.
Give us a couple of examples. Now, you've talked about income splitting, but give us a couple of examples about what the deals would be for seniors.
Well, I think a couple of things that come to mind would be increasing the amount of RRSP availability to seniors. I know that, or to people that are saving for their senior years. Many people don't take advantage of that right now, and that's it's a great savings program and a tax savings program for them in their prime earning years, and they need to take advantage of that. And in fact, we need to increase the capacity to that. The other program that works very nicely with that is the tax-free savings account, the TFSA, as it's been called, and that was introduced just a couple of years ago, where you and I can put our after-tax dollars into this TFSA, working with our financial institutions, and the money that is grown inside of the TFSA is actually tax-free. And so when I reach my retirement years, I have more disposable income available to me to meet those different needs that I have somewhere down the road as well. Those are just two examples that currently exist, and I'd like to see even strengthened and expanded by the government budget tomorrow.
What would you like to see as far as a change or innovation that would further along your goals and aspirations?
One of the things that we've supported is a change or an increase in the charitable tax rate. Currently, the tax rate is 29% for any charitable donations, whether it's to your church or the Red Cross, or if you're sending money to Haiti or now Chile with their disasters that they've had in these recent weeks. Your $100 earns you back or it gives you a tax credit of $29 in that first $100. We would like to see an increase in that. One of the things that we notice with the change in demographics is that the number of people, what we call the core group of volunteers, both donating their time but also donating their money, is actually beginning to decrease. People have less time on their hands, or maybe they have less disposable income, and that so the size of that group is starting to shrink. One of the things, and many of those groups that are out in the community, we talked about Big Brothers and Red Cross and so on earlier in the show, they need more people. They need more volunteers. They need more increased dollars. And they are actually the best ones to support many of the issues within our community level. By increasing the charitable tax rate, more dollars would actually end up in the pockets of those charities. I as a donor, you as a donor, would be able to see more dollars donating going into those programs themselves and receive a higher tax credit. There's a cost to that to the governments of both the federal and provincial level. However, over the long term, the stability of those groups and organizations that are supporting single parent moms and alcohol and abuse victims and sexual abuse victims and people in the community that are what we call the downtrodden in many ways, they get better support long term as well. So that's something I'd like to see.
Several times, Dave, you've said the federal and provincial governments. Mm-hmm. Do you lobby the provincial governments as well?
We have spoken to a couple of different provincial governments as issues arise. For instance, right now, the Ontario government is going into a full-day kindergarten program. We're opposed to that. Well, we don't see the benefits of that. The research that has been cited is actually not very clear. There are some downsides to it as well. There is an enormous cost, and here we have a time when we're closing hospital beds or laying off nurses and things like that. School districts are pinched for dollars to start with. And here we're introducing what will be another multi-billion-dollar program across the province. The benefits, to be quite honest, from our research, are not there. If more parents were able to make choices for their children, some will choose a child care program. Others will choose to have one of their mom or dad stay at home with the children. And that's the best scenario for kids, to be quite honest. We see good results with that.
But, Dave, it sounds like you're almost hoping that everyone will have a parent. The old-fashioned institute of family that we see in movies nowadays. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, the Leave It to Beaver days were exactly that. They were television. Certainly there were problems and difficulties in, the 50s or 40s or whatever decade you want to look at. But you know what? There were some good things going on there as well. I know that there's some stresses on families right now. Finance is the number one stress. We did a survey three years ago now, and the number one stressor across family groups, whether it's the youngest age group right through to senior citizens, is family finances. And every group indicated that if we could find financial relief, tax relief, that whether we're putting our kids through university or whether they're trying to get a start in buying a house or a condo or apartment or whatever it might be, whether it's preparing for seniors' years, family finances are the number one issue. And we don't wear rose-colored glasses, and we realize that there are some some difficulties with whichever decade you want to look at. But at the same time, if we want a strong society, then we need to look to our children and determine what's best for them. And that's the role model that we're trying to play right now.
David, thanks for spending some time with us on this. We look forward, of all of us, I think, to the throne speech and then subsequently the federal budget tomorrow. You'll be in lockup tomorrow, I understand.
I will. They actually lock us up in a room and they don't give us our cell phones or Blackberries and iPhones. And we're allowed to look through the budget and read it through, prepare some statements before the finance minister rises in the House and announces what the budget is actually going to contain. And that way we're prepared and able to do interviews and follow up and make statements as well. So I'm looking forward to that today.
Dave, have you done that before?
I've done it the last 4 years, actually, yes.
Ah, okay.
And it's been very interesting.
David, we'll look forward to your comments post-budget and post-throne speech. We thank you very much for sharing some of your ideas this morning prior to those events.
My thanks, John, to you and your listeners.
Thank you.
All the best.
Bye-bye. That's David Quist. He is Executive Director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. If you want more information on that, by the way, their website, which we will link to ours, obviously Joe Carter will take care of that, www.imfcanada.org. imfcanada.org. And as I speak, I know Joe is now linking that. It's already done, he tells me. So it's linked to us if you want more information on it. As a matter of fact, they have a family policy conference coming up, Beyond the Front Door, it's called, and it's coming up in mid-March, and you might want to check it out. Some very spectacular speakers. We'll take a break here when we